Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Welcome back, and we are going through the Constitution. As a matter of fact, on the Reclaiming the Republic page, I was prodded. I was convinced that I could at least put up the overview. So that's what we've been doing since we started covering the Constitution. So you should be able to just go to the Red State Talk Radio podcast page on Reclaiming the Republic and be able to see for yourself where we are and what we're doing as far as our content. So it's just a quick bullet. I don't go into the details of all the different stuff that we used to cover. I just don't have the time to do that. Now, you're more than welcome. Maybe I ought to have a promo. Hey, if you want to help, actually, I should do a promo so that, because people that tune in 10 minutes from now won't hear what I'm talking about. So there's a good likelihood that over time, people will hear that promo and be able to start doing things. So you know what? I'm gonna start working on some promos. And so we'll see how that goes. Anyway, if you want to help, that's one of the things you can do is you can, you know, listen to the show and give me a little synopsis of what we covered, and I will put that up with a little byline for you. Anywho, anyway, as we know, we're looking over our shoulders, and I'm actually looking east from the West Coast, and I see no sign, none whatsoever, that the federal government or any government between here and there is looking to actually start complying to the Constitution, is looking to actually comply fully to the Constitution for the United States and getting their own states into compliance. And with that, there's no sign that they're going to even relinquish any of the powers that they've usurped, and they're looking to assume more. And as a matter of fact, this election, as what is on play, we absolutely see the evil that is going on. Now, one of the things that I want to point out today before we get into the Constitution, because, you know, folks, it's now or never, right? It is now or never. Either we start working and start uniting, and everybody that I've talked to and everybody that's gotten involved, there's no doubt in my life. I mean, we all have our challenges, but it seems like we still have the ability to do. I mean, the Lord blesses us to be able to do this work. So let me just say this. The deceiver's credo, Satan's credo for these people who are operating, this is second nature to them. Whenever something happens, whenever the spotlight shines on them, whenever they become identified for doing wrong, this is what they do. They admit nothing. They deny everything. They always have an alibi or an out, and they make counter accusations. So when we called them out for January 6th, violating the Constitution, and sued them, they sure pursued going after all these people. As a matter of fact, I think that was a part of their plan because they knew prior to January 6th, because we had petitions going, we were out there in front, and they knew that they had to have some plan to basically obfuscate and obscure what the truth really was, because that's what they have to do. And they have to convince the American people that we have no right to hold them accountable to the Constitution. Where do we get off? They are gods. They're ascending. They're in the ascension process to being our gods. And as a matter of fact, if you don't think so, try to go talk to your local county public servants. Try to talk to anybody that is in public service, and you'll probably find the majority of them believe that they are a god, demigod, or on that path of ascension. So I just want you to understand that we have a a second nature behavior that is being exhibited, because this is exactly what they do. As soon as the light, as soon as the microphone, as soon as something breaks, the first thing they do is they get out there and they admit nothing, they deny everything, they have an alibi, or they at least have some form of out, and they make counter accusations. And that is a second nature response to when they've been exposed. That's how well they operate and train. Now, the other thing I really wanted to point out, because I've been talking about this, and I've talked about this in several different ways regarding big tech actually operating in filtering and so forth. And I've told you, if you use Reagan.com for your email, if you use Google, if you use any of the big tech, I'm surprised Yahoo doesn't do this. There are some other big techs that aren't doing this, but many of the big hardcore left-leaning tech companies are actually going after and shutting down any type of email that comes from independent email domains. In other words, if they're not a part of the Google, they're not trusted. And so the RNC is out there, and the RNC has basically has caught Google in this, I'll just say, this filtering process, where when they've tried to send emails out to all of their, you know, their email recipients, they have been filtered and are blocked by Google. And so they're suing them because the fact that they're stifling speech because they're calling it spam is, I mean, people, there is a right to association. And if you have an associate, and if you even have, and I know the RNC does this, and I'm not defending the devil here, because the RNC, as far as I'm concerned, if you've listened to the show, I think that they're the devil, but they're, or at least they're in league with the devil. And they have a conservative face for the devil. You know, the devil will, you know, deceive you with either one out of, you know, nine truths and one lie, or nine lies and one truth. And the, you know, the people that buy into all the lies, those are the people that are already doing his bidding. But the Republican Party, I've digressed a little bit, but the Republican Party is obviously that fascia for them, because they're actually getting out there and saying the nine truths with the one lie or more. Anyway, so the fact is, I know the RNC has, you know, the unsubscribe type of thing and so forth for people that have maybe receiving their emails, to basically, you know, give them the opportunity to opt out if they don't want to receive those emails. But Google just says, we're going to stop those emails from coming into you. And we've had these problems with our ISP and so forth. And it was about 2 years ago when they came out with these plans to actually get people to force them into being involved in their spam filtering. But they've taken an aggressive position where, you know, I contacted my ISP several times. These people are not spam. You know, put them in or give me the option so that I can, you know, no longer have any spam filters at all. And, oh, well, we don't have any spam filters. So here's the irony of 1&1.com. They tell me they have no spam filters, but I have to go in on a regular basis and move things out of their spam box. They say, oh, you received an email, but we dropped it in spam for you, which means that they had a filter. And then they tell me, oh, no, we don't have a filter. There's no filtering at all. Then I go, well, why is that there? I didn't put it there. Did you put it there? This is how bad it is. This is where we are. And it's they're taking us around the corner. And when we get behind the woodshed, the beating will commence. This happens in every society that succumbs to tyranny and despotism. Now, I want to talk to you about an immune system and how our government is designed like our body's immune system, but we'll do that probably this coming Friday, because we want to get some more traction getting through the Constitution. And with just basically a minute and a half left, let's go ahead and get started. on the Constitution. Before we get into, because we were in the middle of the 14th Amendment, is going to start over with Section 1 again, I need to do a go-back. And the first go-back, there's two go-backs I want to do, if you don't mind, and I appreciate this, that we need to have a, what I'll call, a re-examination of our process of bond, bail, and that type of thing. Because you hear people already out there advocating that they need to get rid of bail and bond and everything else. No, because it's unfair. These people, no. If these people are able-bodied and they committed a crime, they're capable of committing a crime, that means they're capable of providing for themselves and doing the right thing. In other words, if you're capable of doing harm, then you're capable of doing good. And so there's no, you know, it's in a Republican form of government, it is to be based on the rule of law. And if you violate the law, you must actually pay the consequences of the law. Now, I do admit, and I do agree, that bail should be of such that it actually hurts, so that you either spend your time in incarceration or, you know, you, and it shouldn't hurt really, really bad if the crime isn't that bad. I mean, the more severe the crime, the more severe the bail should be. But the problem is that we don't have a fair system because it does not account for the disparate financial station of every person in society. And so we want to get into what I believe the framers would have imposed had they had the technology and the ability to do this. We'll be right back after these two promos.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416. Okay, so let me get back into this bail concept, because I really want to dive into this. We've gotten into this in the issues with the Bill of Rights for the 21st Century and so forth, and the issues to campaign on to get us back into the compliance of the Constitution. So the framers did not envision this concept of bond or bail to actually be something that would be so egregious. As a matter of fact, the Eighth Amendment basically states, and I kind of went beyond it, Here it is right here. Excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted. Now, there are excessive crimes, but when one commits a crime, maybe it's not necessarily excessive. Maybe you stole something. Then the crime shouldn't be, you know, I should say the bail shouldn't be astronomically, I mean, greater than a DUI or what have you. DUI, it's almost you put yourself into a position where you can kill somebody, do property damage, you can cause egregious harm. And so even though you may not have done it, you were in the capacity or the state of being able to do that. And so having you have pay a higher bail instead of somebody that has shoplifted or somebody that has done even grand larceny. I know grand larceny is bad and it should be a high bail, but when you're talking about taking life and that type of thing, then we should have a very stiff punishment. But our bail is not the punishment process, but it is the beginning of making people feel, you know, the constraints or the consequences of what they've done. And so when we look at the bail of one person for the same crime, and, you know, and a DUI is excellent because it really helps place perspective. When you look at the dollar value of life, you look at the dollar value of potential property being destroyed and damaged, and, you know, all of those other things that would come from a drunk driver or an inebriated driver that killed somebody or, you know, had an accident, then the bail for that should be based on, you know, maybe, and this is where I think reasonable people, because I don't want to be king, I don't want to say this is what it should be, but I believe that the society, the vicinage, if the people, you know, are really a dry community and they don't drink, you know, maybe there's places in Utah where, you know, they look at, you know, this inebriation, this type of thing really bad, but maybe you live in Las Vegas and you really promote getting drunk and drunk driving, then you can lessen it there if that's what you want. But I would think that in Utah, the penalty would be pretty high because they look at this as an abomination possibly. But let them decide what it is for the base. And when I say the base, not on the individual, but, you know, we need to start looking at the individual and their means, because obviously rock stars and professional athletes, these people that, you know, get behind a wheel because there's really no consequence. They just write a check and they get out of jail. They don't even go to trial because they write these big checks to, you know, oh, well, we're really sorry. And then they do it again. I mean, how many times have we seen, you know, the elitists get away with this stuff? We need to have a mandate that says, you know what, your bail is going to be this. Because if an elitist can pay a $150,000 fine for bail and actually make their drunk driving, reckless driving, or what, you change it to reckless driving and just pay the fine for $250,000, that's nothing to them. But that can't be done by, you know, Joe, you know, the young up-and-coming carpenter. And so we need to look at what it is, you know, that a person makes to determine, okay, so a drunk driving should be 1.5 years. The bail for that should be 1.5 years of income. It should hurt somebody that much to where, you know, if you only make $30,000, then that would be $45,000 that you'd have to pay bail on. And so that way it is a just or a fair system, because it is equal to what the elitists would have to pay that makes $9 million a year. Then they would have to pay, what is that, $13.5 million to pay for their bail. So this way, when we, if we revamp our bail system to make it so that everybody really feels the pain, because we don't have a fair system when our elitists and our politicians have a way of getting out of it. You know, whether it's the DA, and as a matter of fact, in all honesty, I truly believe that the DA and these deals that they make, they need to be, the power needs to be removed from them when it comes down to bail. It's one thing to, you know, make plea deals in certain capacity, certain cases, but when it comes down to bail, bail should be just automated. It should be removed away from the court and the judge, that we, the people, need to determine what it is. And as a matter of fact, we should actually consider a higher penalty for those who have the public trust. In other words, if you're a judge, if you're a public servant and you have a DUI, is that not a felony? Potential murder? Is that not a felony? Then you should actually be removed from office because of this potential cause or the severity of the crime you've committed. So we, the people, need to form grand juries, and this is what we need to do at a state and county level, is to form grand juries so that this can all be placed on the table, because this is the only way we, the people, are going to be able to actually look at and revise this thing we call bails and bonds and how we punish people at the very front end. And actually continuing through this, we need to look at how to do, you know, the punishment process as far as the sentencing, that type of thing, because we really do need to relook at what and how and hear all of the arguments and then, you know, look at the law and look at the paradigms locally, because again, this goes hand in hand with, you know, the old good old fashioned competition. You know, when certain states, because they have higher morals and greater standards, you know, actually have a reduced crime, a reduced death rate of, you know, acts of fatalities on the road, because they're hard on that. They go after you. And so people go, well, I'm not going to take the risk. I'm not going to take that chance. This is how they compete, because people say we need to adopt something more like what they have. It forces people to recognize the problems that they have in their system and make the changes. And so there is merit for this, folks. I want you, because I hear this all the time, and the left is actually trying to take away the consequences of sin. No, the whole purpose of a penal system, the whole purpose of laws, is to actually punish people when they violate the laws, because we agree that these laws, this is bad stuff. You shouldn't be doing this. And if you did it, that means you could have done something good instead. So you have to pay the consequences for that. So anyway, the other go-back that I have is on the 13th Amendment. And so when we look at the 13th Amendment, the 13th Amendment talks about neither slavery nor involuntary servitude except as a punishment for crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. Congress shall have the power to enforce this. And we talked about that little clause there. But the whole point is that if you've been following the sovereign citizen movement, there are lots of people that are going to tell you that there are people that are brokering your future wages. In other words, you basically have been converted to chattel, and that the economics of the United States has been of such to where you have been conscripted. America has been conscripted for the debt that it owns. And so as it sells debt and as it basically, you know, plays in the World Economic Forum, America is conscripting itself. And so there's a sovereign citizen movement that goes out and says they're legally enslaving you and they're selling your wages. This is why they're constantly placed this attachment to how much debt you owe to, you know, these foreign nations. Oh, every household owes $100,000. Folks, that $100,000, that debt that the federal government is taking, is unconstitutional. And more importantly, if the government is actually waging you as property and your future label as property, then what they're talking about, this idea of slavery and this leveraging of financing against you, that you can be basically co-opted and dragged away and compelled into slavery, that violates the Constitution. So, what are we going to do about it? Well, folks, this is why we absolutely require that we start demanding full compliance of the Constitution, because if this is even happening, it's a violation of the Constitution, and those people doing that, it's the same thing with our debt. All of these things will be wiped away if we take faith and actually demand compliance of the Constitution. Folks, I can't paint a better picture than that. We'll be right back.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me, AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADD-LOCAL or visit them on the web at www.addlocal.com. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, folks, so the only way you're going to get your constitutional counties back is by you actually using your constitution as a weapon. This is why we kind of went through this before of how to create constitutional counties and how important it is in using the First Amendment petition. That is the weapon. I mean, there's a lot of people that believe this convention of states crap that, oh, well, you know, the only mechanism to hold the federal government accountable and to, you know, basically take back and enforce the Constitution is the Article 5. Now, are you kidding me? There's nowhere in the context of the ratification debates that ever defined that as the process of doing that. Technically, there's a huge confusion because the process is interposition, which is republic review, which is what Jefferson talked about in his book, The State of Virginia, in 1783 or 84, prior to the Constitution. And it was mentioned in Federalist Paper number 49. It was right there in the very first paragraph by James Madison. And in addition to that, in 1798, when the federal government actually violated the Constitution, they went down a completely different path. They didn't use a convention of states. If truly if Meckler and the convention of state folks were correct, then what Madison and Jefferson would have exercised or called for a petition to, you know, amend the Constitution. They would have had the state of Kentucky and Virginia submit petitions in calling for constitutional conventions. And that's not what they did, folks. So the reality is that the only tool, the one tool that we actually have to get to the constitutional counties that you deserve, but you have to actually do and assert a little work. And it becomes very easy when the community actually starts waking up. I mean, it just makes sense. This is what we got to do. It's kind of like, we're going to cover this on Friday, it's kick-starting your immune system. There are certain things with, you know, the body when your immune system is just lackluster or what have you. There are certain things you can do that really boosts it and helps it. But in government, we have the ability to kick it into high gear. It takes a little bit longer, of course. You know, what the good Lord, what our Creator did in creating the body and life itself is just miraculous. But He equally miraculous, or, you know, it's still as miraculous as the government that He created. Because there's just no way man would have ever conceived such a government. There's just no way. Anyway, let's get into the 14th Amendment. Now, there are three parts to Section 1. And so the first part to Section 1 is the naturalization and or the citizenship clause, which is all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. Now, what this means is that all those who actually resided in the United States that were under the jurisdiction, in other words, if the Constitution provided jurisdiction over these people, whether it be because they were slaves, but the, you know, they were still had apportionments, they, in other words, they still had some form of right of representation, then those folks, and this was all about, this very first clause was all about allowing slaves to become citizens of the United States, period. So the second part is the big whammy, which is no state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States. So in other words, this covers the rights of the citizens, the privileges and immunities of U.S. citizens. Excuse me. I know lots of people that really look at this clause and they can't see the simplicity and the beauty of this clause. They look at this, and there's nowhere in here that this disparages the state's rights from all things not delegated. You got to understand that the privileges and immunities are only those that are not within or that are actually identified within the Constitution. In other words, do you have a problem with your state government not being able to make a law that keeps you from being able to go to church and worship, you know, your Creator how you choose? Those are the types of laws, the privileges, and the immunities that it protects. Your immunity from not being able or being kept from being able to petition government, like what happened on January 6, 2021, when Congress kept the people from being able to petition them. So they violated your immunities. Actually, the state, if that would have been the state, that they would have been violating your immunity. Bottom line, the federal government abridged your right, and that's what really happened. So anyway, and when we get into the interposition stuff, I'm going to try to play this down the path, and when I say interposition, the Kentucky resolutions of 1798, 1799, and Madison's report on the resolutions, as well as Madison's notes on nullification. We're going to go through this in detail so that you really, you have it right there in your hands, folks, that you can see that the plan and what must be done to force the federal government into compliance, is interposition. They're not going to do this on their own. And this is why the faster we get constitutional counties, the faster we can create constitutional states. There are a few states that I believe will become constitutional states because there's enough decent people. Not that there's not a lot of rhinos, but there's enough decent people that all we need to do is replace and target and replace those who are keeping these bills from being passed. So we have to make a concerted effort to tie and associate and create a campaign on the bill. And what I mean by this is in South Dakota, Wyoming, and so forth. We need to clearly identify and make these people accountable and say, if none of these people actually call for a revote so that they can vote for it, then they need to be replaced. If they didn't understand the bill, then that's unacceptable, because every vote that they take, if they're an uninformed voter, they don't deserve to be a public servant. And so we actually have to start using all the leverage they give us, because bottom line, in this bill, if they fail to support the bill, that means that they refuse to support the Constitution. It's that simple, because the bill is all about fully supporting and ensuring that the Constitution is fully supported. So in other words, they're obligated by oath to actually pass this bill. They don't, then we can have a heyday. And every day is a heyday at their expense. By the time they come up for re-election, if you do your job and holding them accountable, by the time they come up for election, they will either resign or they'll already be able to read the tea leaves, that they will be overwhelmed with whoever challenges them, that the people are that fed up. All you have to do is educate the people and connect the dots, especially in these dark red counties where these guys, these rhinos, are residing. So anyway, the third and final part of Section 1 is, I like to call it, the stating of the obvious. And so, nor shall any state, this is what it says, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor deny any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws. The whole point of the equal protection is to make sure that they enforce the laws for all people. The reality was, and at the same time that this amendment was going through, there was an organization created within the federal government called the Freedmen Bureau. And the Freedmen Bureau was gathering information and actually enforcing laws that were being, inflicted upon these rebellious states as they were punishing and harassing and killing the freed slaves, the freedmen. And so when you really look at the history, one of the most revealing points is this ratification process of this bill, or this amendment. When it was out for ratification, President Johnson was going around saying, we don't need this stupid amendment. The South is behaving perfectly. They're behaving just fine. When in New Orleans, when they had a freedmen convention where a bunch of black activists, black politicians, and so forth convened to get organized, the government, or I should say law enforcement and people with guns, descended upon them and massacred them. Yes, this happened in New Orleans. And because it happened at the time when Johnson was campaigning that, we don't have to worry about the South. The South is respecting the rights of these individuals. It proved otherwise. And it was basically his downfall. Most people believe that his downfall had more to do with his impeachment and those types of things. But I actually believe that because he was caught lying in front of the nation, it was a testament that he had to go, that nobody could trust or believe that he spoke with any honorable intent. So with that, folks, what we're going to do is we're going to take these two breaks, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to get into Section 2 of the 14th Amendment, which is also being violated badly. but we'll be back right after these two promos. Thank you so much.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay. Excuse me. So you think that I've got this frog in my throat. And as a matter of fact, I've been really trying not to cough really bad because I've got a flare-up in my lungs. But anyhow, we're pursuing or pushing forward and pursuing the truth. Section 2 of the 14th Amendment, this is being violated, folks, and we'll get into how this is being violated. Representatives shall be apportioned among the several states according to their respective numbers, counting the whole number of persons in each state, including Indians and excluding Indians not taxed. Now, so I'm not sure how many Indians at that point in time were being taxed at all or not, but that's for a different show. But the right to vote at any election for the choice of electors for president and vice president of the United States, representatives in Congress, the executive and judicial officers of a state, or the members of the legislature thereof is denied to any of the male inhabitants of such state being 21 years of age. In other words, this is where they set both the standards where the federal government had to step in this amendment to ensure the 21-year-old males were allowed to vote, regardless of their race, ethnicity, or what have you. And so it said all in male inhabitants and citizens of the United States or in any way abridged. In other words, if their voting privileges are abridged in any way, except for participation in rebellion or other crime, the basis of representation therein shall be reduced in the proportion which the number of the such male citizens shall bear to the whole number of male citizens 21 years of age in such state. Now today, since of 1980 with Jimmy Carter, prior to 1980, he made it possible that all people, inhabitants, were counted in the census as U.S. citizens for apportionment. So in other words, if you had invaders living in your state, like California, California has millions of invaders, and a lot of the southern states have millions of invaders, they are getting an unequal representation because they're getting apportionment. Because what this does is this changes the standards of apportionment, of who can be counted for apportionment and who must be removed from apportionment. So in other words, go back to this. Representatives shall be apportioned among the several states according to their respective numbers, counting the whole number of persons in each state, excluding Indians not taxed. But when the right to vote of an election for the choice of electors for president and vice president of the United States, representatives of Congress, executives and judicial officers of a state, or the members of the legislature thereof is denied to any male inhabitants of such state being 21 years of age and citizens of the United States. So that right there is the qualifier, because the only people that can be apportioned for are citizens of the United States. And if there are citizens that have their right to vote abridged, so when Carter actually passed the law that they could apportion for invaders and people that were here illegally or even legally, even those people that were migrant workers, those people who were green card holders or, you know, professionals that were working here on contract, what have you, those people were counted and those states and those communities were apportioned based on the whole population, instead of the population of the citizens. And that's how it was. The Constitution requires that it be done by U.S. citizens. And so any citizen that is denied the right to vote by the state, this was the punishment. Back in those days, this was the punishment. If you didn't allow black men to vote, then you lost representation. You would not be able to obtain representation for the people you claim as, you know, needing representation, but you're not giving them the opportunity to vote in their representation. So this kind of created this paradigm, folks, and you got to understand this, that you have a property right in your representation. You. And when somebody comes along that is not of your state, that is a foreigner, that has no business, no dog in the fight in the election of your representative, whether that be a county representative, your state legislature, your congressperson, or your state senator. Anybody that comes along and tries to influence that election and tries to give money and those types of things, they are tampering and basically interfering. That's election interference. And those people should be arrested. Those people in California, those people, whoever has the deep pockets to fund all of this stuff, they should be arrested and tried for election interference, because they have no right. They have no right to be doing any bidding, influencing, what have you, within your local elections for your representation. I mean, it's just like, why don't we just let China and Soros, you know, control our elections based on the money, and we'll just follow the money. If we don't take back these basic standards and we don't start changing paradigms, so you have to demand that your county be a closed county election. In other words, no money comes from outside that county for any county officer. And you have to close your legislative districts to make sure that no money comes out from outside of that legislative district to influence your representation. They don't have a right. They have no legal standing to say, I have a right to throw money in your election to ensure that your representative is one that I want. That's not their representative. And so we need to send all of these, nothing but bad things in my mind, all of these repugnant people need to be sent packing out of your election areas, period. Okay? So let's move into Section 3. Now, I've got 3.5 minutes, and there's no way I'll probably cover this,
But Section 3 is the big, I mean, this is the big connector. This right here is the, whether it be the protein, the enzyme, whatever you want to, you know, refer to of how the human body attacks something foreign, like bacteria, possibly a virus, or what have you. When we look at, you know, how we attack, Section 3 is that protein. It's that enzyme. It is that tool we're to use to attack all things that don't belong within our constitution, constitutional framework, etc. So Section 3 basically states this: no person shall be a senator or representative in Congress, or elector of president and vice president, or hold any office, civil or military, under the United States or under any state, who, having previously taken an oath as a member of Congress or as an officer of the United States or as a member of any state legislature or as any executive or judicial officer of any state to support the Constitution, shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same or against the Constitution, or given or comfort, given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof. What that means is no one shall be that public servant if, because if they've supported rebellion or insurrection against the Constitution. Now, when you support, and it says here that shall have engaged in, engaged means that you see something and you don't engage in it. That means that you've been engaged. What does that mean, GR? Well, if you watch a crime going down, if you, as a matter of fact, this is like a doctor's, you know, requirement, obligation, because the obligation of a public servant is to support. If you become aware of this attack on the Constitution, if you become aware of a plan or a bill, and the underlying intent of this is to take away or to violate the Constitution, take away the liberties of the people, what have you, then your obligation is to support the Constitution. In other words, if you do nothing, then you are rebelling. Now, there is one case in point where James Madison, because Section 3 didn't exist, actually violated Section 3. And I think he's rolling in his grave because he allowed it to happen because of his friendship and his desire to create a working relationship with Hamilton, because this was the first time these men, you know, because these men worked together and he was trying to continue to nurture this relationship. But this is where Hamilton and Madison actually parted ways. But Madison saw and knew what the Assumption Act was going to do. He knew it was a violation, and his obligation actively, his active obligation was to support the Constitution because he was under legal oath to do so. However, there wasn't any consequence at that point in time to actually hold him accountable. And so this is the one thing that, you know, we can always find fault in everybody. Don't forget that. We all have our failures. We all have our faults. We all have our sins. I'm J.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.